Vin Scully joins us on Sports Byline, Hall of Fame broadcaster and the voice of the Los Angeles Dodgers. He's been broadcasting Dodger games since 1950 when they were back in Brooklyn, and he has the longest tenure of any broadcaster with a single team in professional sports history. He is certainly known for that dulcet voice, descriptive calls, and his signature introduction to Dodger games. It's time for Dodger baseball. Vince, you grew up in New York. You were born in 1927, and you grew up in the Washington Heights section of Manhattan. Take me back to New York at that time.
Well, in those days, number one, I had never, ever heard of drugs. So we had no problem growing up in the streets of our neighborhood in Washington Heights. The one thing I believe that might very well have saved our lives and sent us off in the right direction was a ball. It might have been a rubber ball that we called a Spalding. It was a Spalding ball, or a tennis ball, or a football, or a softball. But whatever it was, it kept us busy and out of trouble. It made us think sports from sun up to sundown, at least. And it was a great growing up time. We played stickball in the streets. I might have been two sewer Scully if the sewers were listed first, second, third, and home. And we used broom handles and usually tennis balls. And we had a wonderful time growing up in the streets. The only problem was, occasionally, someone in the neighborhood in one of the many apartment houses would be concerned that one of us might hit a tennis ball and break a window. So they would call the police, and the police would come, and we would drop the broom handles and run and hide. And the police would take the broom handles, put them halfway down a manhole cover, and snap them off so we couldn't play once they left. And I'm sure if you talk to the police department in New York today, they would give anything to have a broom handle be their only problem.
I know you decided you wanted to become a sports announcer when you became fascinated with the football broadcasts on radio. What were the early broadcast sports broadcasts that you heard?
Well, you know, Ron, we had a four-legged radio, and I was able to crawl underneath it with a pillow and let the speaker be directly over my face, and the crowd noise from a big-time football game would come out of that speaker like water out of a shower head, and it would just drench me, and I would respond with goosebumps, and I would think, oh my gosh, isn't this exciting? Now, here I am in an apartment, fifth-floor walk-up apartment in Washington Heights, and I might be listening to a Tennessee-Alabama game, having no knowledge of anyone playing, but the roar of the crowd was what really got to me. And later, when I was 8 years old, because of the influence of the crowd, I wrote a composition for the Good Nuns that I would like to be a sports announcer. Well, this was pretty outside of the box. The boys in grammar school all wanted to be policemen and firemen and doctors and lawyers and athletes. And the girls wanted to be nurses and mommies and ballet dancers, etc. And here is this little redhead kid saying, I want to be a sports announcer. So I really was gifted in the sense that I knew what I wanted at such a very young age.
The style of broadcasters, who are some of the broadcasters, Vin, that you listen to and the style of their play-by-play?
Well, number one, I was just totally enamored by the richness of his voice, and that was Ted Husing, who did a lot of football and tennis and golf, all on radio, naturally. But he was truly remarkable, and of course he had a magnificent vocabulary to go along with his voice. He is the only football announcer I ever heard of who would not only talk about the secondary, but he would also talk about the tertiary. And in boxing, he would describe the sanguine flow of somebody's bloody nose. I mean, he was really marvelous. And then, of course, the electricity. I've never quite heard a voice as electric as a man named Bill Stern, who was a football announcer and just a remarkable radio man. Then there was Red Barber, for whom I was fortunate enough to learn and grow up under. He was like an extra father to me. So they were just a couple, but I just lived and knew the voices of all of them after a while.
A large part of your early life was Fordham University. You not only went there, Vin, but you also played center field for the Rams baseball team, and you called broadcasts for the baseball, football, and basketball teams as well. But you helped found the radio station, which was WFUV. Tell me about that station.
Well, the station is a true station. It is not a campus station, which is only heard on campus. This is an FM station that is heard throughout the New York, Connecticut, New Jersey area. And I just happened to be in school at the time when they put this station on the air. So I was one of several fellows who worked, and I was delighted to have a chance to be on the air. Originally, I went into the Navy briefly thinking that I would perhaps be a writer, but I always longed for the roar of the crowd, and I thought, well, maybe I would be a sports writer, and I would still hear the roar of the crowd. But I also realized as I got older, what I really wanted to do was to speak for a living, and here was WFUV just waiting for me to write my pieces and do my pieces, and it was a remarkable training ground for me. It also gave me the opportunity and the equipment to come up with a large disc, an acetate disc, of the various things that I did, a little football, a little basketball, a little this, a little that, which I eventually sent out to the big stations and got my first job off campus when I graduated with WTOP AM and FM, which is a 50,000-watt station in Washington, D.C. And I was hired there as a summer replacement announcer. As each member of the staff went on vacation, I assumed all of his duties. And, of course, that gave me a little rounded experience as well. And then they asked me, when I had gone through the entire staff and I was leaving probably the first week of December, right around that time, but they guaranteed me a permanent job in February of the next year because one of these staff members was leaving. Well, while I was there, they called me and said, we have an emergency. Red Barber needs a football announcer, etc., and I'm trying to speed up the story. Did a football game. The next thing I know, I did another one, Harvard-Yale. And the next thing I knew, Ernie Harwell left Brooklyn, and Red Barber offered me the job as the third announcer. So it all went back, really, from WFUV to WTOP and eventually to Brooklyn.
Now, I understand, Vin, that what impressed Red Barber about you was the coverage of that football game from Fenway Park in Boston. And then the story goes, well, I'll let you pick it up, that you had to do that game from the roof of the stadium.
Well, what happened was, here I am young, just out of college, having worked in Washington, and Red calls and tells me about this Boston University Maryland game. And I was to go to Fenway Park and do the game as part of the CBS Roundup, which was a show that did about four games, naturally not simultaneously, but they would bounce from one game to the next. They had three other fine football announcers. So I went up there to do the game. Meanwhile, my university, Fordham University, was going to play Boston College. So I figured, as any young man would, after my game, I would go over to the dance at Boston College, see some of my buddies from school, and have a great time. And I also envisioned, even though it was the middle of November in Boston, I had a top coat and a hat and gloves, but I thought, well, I'm working for a network, and the hat, the coat, the gloves, they're going to get in my way as far as the dance is concerned, and I know I'll be in a beautiful studio, so I left everything in the hotel. When I got to Fenway Park, I did not have a beautiful studio. I had nothing. I had a poor engineer freezing, sitting at a camp stool. He had a card table and all of his equipment on the card table and a microphone and 50 yards of cable. And we sat on the 50-yard line. And as the game progressed, I moved up and down on the roof. If the pass went 20 yards down the line, I would go 20 yards down the line. Now, I wasn't on the air simultaneously with the play-by-play, but Red kept coming back and forth to me. Meanwhile, the other three games pretty much disintegrated. My game turned out to be a great game, and Red spent most of the time with me. When it was over, I was heartsick. I was frozen. I remember they turned the lights on in the third quarter. It was a bitter cold late afternoon, early evening. And when it was finished, I thought I had this golden opportunity, and I couldn't possibly have done well because I was literally frozen to death. And the next Monday following the Saturday game, someone, I assume from Boston University or maybe from Fenway Park, called Red to apologize for putting this young man through all these problems. Well, let's say I did a very, very ordinary job. Red suddenly was quite impressed with the news. He felt that this young announcer, who was freezing, had not any quarters at all to protect him from the wind, and nevertheless never complained, never mentioned it, and never used it as an excuse. So all of a sudden, this very, very ordinary job was better than that as far as Red was concerned. And I will always remember when he called me and he said, "Well, don't worry, young man. You'll have a booth. You're doing Harvard-Yale." So those were marvelous moments for me in the early going.
We're talking about the Hall of Fame career of Vin Scully. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show.